tell me,
Well, if I'm reading this, my additional cost savings of single payer system going across the bottom, and you said that most of the savings in that bottom portion, to answer Jim's question, most of the savings in the bottom portion was due to the cost containment because the wash, the single payer, the wash between the new access and the administrative cost. So, across the bottom line there, you can make $589 million by 1996, essentially through the cost containment effort.
So, am I, you mean summing these things up?
No, summing the bottom line.
By 1996.
Additional cost.
I'm sorry, Jay. Keep going with your point. I'll probably get it.
My point is that we're saving. I agree it's a distribution problem, but we're saving enough money by 1996 to make up the $589 million. So if you don't do both at once and you phase one in after 1996, theoretically you should have the money. The question is, well, you don't have all that money, though, because that's the 1991 cost is being inflated too, so you have to work that in. But at some point, you should be able to work out some kind of scheme where you're able to identify savings and somehow phase the other piece of it.
Yeah, let me just say that in some ways, I mean, all along, where are we here? Universal access. The savings from going to, now we're at this point, let's say we nail a couple of things down. Big ticket savings come from the expenditure cap. Then we're down here talking about a plus and a minus, a small plus and a small minus due to universal access / single payer. Wherever you move them, they sort of wash each other out to some degree. I mean, there's more detail we could put in here, but essentially they wash each other out. So where you start them, you know, doesn't necessarily make a heck of a lot of difference. If I can take your point and sort of expand a little bit off, and I'll actually try to put it in a little bit of the national context. The issue, I just showed you on a previous chart, you know, overall savings to the state of $749 million over this 10-year period. You've all been watching the debates, you know, and healthcare has been a major issue here. And, you know, Clinton has been pushed on his plan. And there have been sort of variations of that plan. And there have been variations based upon the difficulty to say, where are you going to get the money from to deal with this issue of payroll tax? There was the, you know, originally there might have been single payer there. At one point he was talking about a payer play, and that sort of talked about all this stuff going into the public pool and all, which, mind you, this single payer is not a terribly attractive item to the electorate at this point. I think that there's an educational process here if this is the way that you're going to go, but it makes sense on paper, certainly. The next issue, so we moved off payer play, and the issue was there was going to be an employer mandate. And that was really an issue dealing with, which meant that some of those pieces stayed on the table. You know, there was still, it wasn't a single payer system, there was just every employer had to contribute, and that would have reduced significantly the number of uninsured. The issue was really one of how you're going to pay for it. You know, and there was, you know, a lot of questions, is there going to be a payroll tax? You know, what's going to be my requirement for that type of thing? One of the things that was said in the debate, no, we will finance it out of savings. And yes, there are going to be savings resulting from the expenditure cap, you know, that line. But I'll tell you, and maybe your legislators are different than legislators I've worked with in other states, and actually I'm not really very impressive. But I've never heard a Medicaid director or anybody else come up and say, how are we going to pay for something? How are we going to get a line item that's going to put, I'm taking off the employment-based contribution, and I need to fill a $589 million gap. And I've never seen a very successful argument that says, we're going to finance it out of savings. Well, where are those savings? Well, it's what you would have spent otherwise. Well, where are they? You know, where did they come from? Well, it's a new expenditure. You have to get it from some source. Yes, it may be less than what you would have paid had you done nothing, but you still have to find that source of revenues. You can't just say it's going to come out of savings, which were some of the comments that were made over the course of the last couple of weeks. And that's sort of the hard issue that you guys need to sort of hold your feet to the fire on if, in fact, this is the direction that you want to go. There's a gap that needs to be filled, and you can't just sort of say it's coming out of savings. yeah, it's going to save you a lot more money, all the players a lot more money than what they otherwise would spend, but you still need to come up for a source for that amount that's going to be in some type of budget.
It's just that, you know, in 1996 or in 2003, we're going to have to come up, the state of Alaska is going to have to come up with money anyways.
Yes.
If healthcare keeps going at the rate it's going. So.
Absolutely. I agree with that entirely. It's just, I'm down at a real sort of very practical level of saying, tell me where, if in fact, these are the dollars that need to go into this trust fund, tell me where that $589 million is going to come from.
My only point was if you have a data system established with this, which you would need, and if it works by 1996, you should be able to have data showing that overall, you save $589 million.
Oh,
at that point, it's a much easier sell to go in to increase the access or to finish off the access point. If you've been increasing access all along,
in other words, doing the expenditure cap first, saying, look how well we're doing, and now we've saved this much money, we can use that money to provide universal access. That's true. That, to be honest with you, that's not a technical issue. That's a political strategy issue, that type of thing. I don't disagree with it. I'm trying to hold us to sort of the dollars and cents and where all this stuff, how it fits together, and what the hole is that needs to be filled, because that's the toughest part. And that's what you asked us to do.
This is great, because for one thing, if you could describe this in terms of what's the pros and cons, we could take this to the public and let them see what kind of choices we're going to have to make. The thing that strikes me about this solution is that it is indeed the ideal solution, even though it's the boat rocker solution, and it offends just about everybody that you can think of, except the individual person who is right now getting the shaft. Most of the solutions, if we do nothing, are the individual people. And what this does, if this is the person, is it reorganizes the entire system around the person and makes all those systems pay. And by reorganizing them, basically, that's really what you're talking about, not really costing them, just reorganizing them and saving them, the individual person can continue to get access. Everybody can continue to get access. So that, to me, is why it is the ideal situation, the ideal system. You know, it's, if we take this out, though, of course, you can just hear all the rhetoric now, and we need to be real clear about what are the advantages of this to the individual, because it just about steps on everybody's toes. And even employers who might have some incentive to go after this, especially if the payroll tax could be shown to be even maybe less expensive than what some employers are paying, especially small employers. Even so, they're giving up control. And I think that's a major issue that people have, is can government really do this? Because, I will no longer be in charge of making decisions about what my coverage is and employees that I employ.
Let me just sort of step off to the side here and say you're entirely right. There's a couple of things that let's just put on the table. One, and Jim, Jim's earlier comment sort of leads us to focus this. The big dollar savings, the big ticket savings, the expenditure cap is theoretically separable from the universal access, the single payer approach, which, a second point, just to again put that on the table, is a hell of a thing to sell. Does it make sense to the Alaska, given your sort of labor market and all the seasonality and all these other issues? You folks, a couple of meetings ago, thought it did. I agree with you. Does that mean that it's any more difficult to sell? Maybe a little bit less, but it's a little tough thing to do. I think you're entirely right. Is this maybe the right thing, the ultimate, the best approach? Yeah. Is it a tough thing to sell? Yeah. And again, expenditure caps are a policy intervention that are somewhat removed from some of these other things. The whole thing is a package, I think, goes a heck of a lot further than in terms of meeting the overall problems that you've got, and it does, in fact, focus around the individual. One of the things, Karen, and let me just say this, and then I'll stop and take questions and come back, but one of the things that you asked, maybe I'll step on some more toes, asked me about the last time was really how does it work? So we both connected to the Bible. All I've talked about at this point in time is to try to give you an idea of how it would work in terms of dollars coming in so that your system can be covered, so that you essentially, you know, have the money that you need to do all this stuff and how you can save money in the process. Once we get clarification on this, then I'll come back and sort of try to throw out at least some ideas in terms of how this whole thing would work with person-based coverage and an expenditure cap, because I think there's another set of issues here, implementation issues too.
Mary, I just wanted to, I think probably as a package is the ultimate. I think it's really very difficult package to sell. I just want to come back to your comment. I don't think, or separate, you can't separate the global budgeting, the big dollar savings from the single payer system. That doesn't mean that you separate it entirely from universal access or increased access. It seems to me that if you get those big dollar savings, you can very easily, or much more easily, target those populations that we were talking about earlier on that need to have immediate access, such as pregnant women and low-income children. There's, that frees up money in the state system to subsidize those people into health care. There's a number of steps you can take to increase access before you finally get the single payer system and universal access. It doesn't mean that you give up on increasing access, at least in my mind. I guess I don't see, maybe I don't know where we're going to go with this whole report as far as task force. It seems to me that there are, again, immediate steps that we should be taking and long-term steps. And the long-term step is a single payer system. And we should not expect that we're going to get that enacted immediately. I think if that's what we want to do, we're probably not going to get anything done, to be honest with you. I think that's going to be, if we tie that price tag of $588 million to the whole package, unless somebody knows something I don't know, we're not going to get that through the next legislative session. But I think it's possible to get other steps in place and start the savings and to start the increased access, the ultimate goal being universal access, and maybe it's a single payer system, is how you finally get to universal access. So I just want to be sure that I'm not missing something that everybody else is.
I'm not the right person to answer that. I think, you know, there's a charge to the group. This is one end to one of those charges, which is universal access. Again, how you phase it in or how you get there, or the political difficulties of selling it.
I know you're not the one to answer this. I just wanted to bring that up because I don't believe that, I just hope we're not thinking that we're adopting a package that is not a phased-in approach. It seems to me that there are some important steps to be taken immediately to try to control long-term costs by increased access, the long-term goal being universal access, which may be the single payer system, but that is not a major step.
I understand what you're saying, Mr. Rod Wilson, but I think the job of the task force is to recommend what we think is the best workable system for the people in Alaska, and if there's some political rough spots in it, or new people in the legislature want to break it up and phase it in or something like that, but I don't feel any compunction as a member of the task force to do that. I think we've got a package that we think will go, and I think there's a lot that's very attractive about this. We ought to recommend it.
Well, let me clarify what I'm saying. I don't think I think the task force should recommend what would be the comprehensive approach to the final package. I also, though, believe the task force should be realistic in recommending, and that's where we're going to get our strength in the legislative process, how we're going to approach getting to that ultimate goal. And to recommend that we immediately try to do that next legislative session is just not going to happen. It's just not feasible. I think Gay's point, I mean, after you've done some of these other things, you start freeing up some money to help pay for some of the increased cost of universal access and the ultimate single-payer system. But to make everything wait until you generate that $589 million, I think means you make everything wait forever. I think you first got to show that we can slow down the inflationary spiral, we can control the cost, we can increase access, and we finally move to universal access. Maybe I should have brought this up.
Mark, you had a comment, then we'll swing over to Trish and Jerry.
I'm not sure I understand it all at all, but it seems to me that you could build an interesting coalition of very, you know, self-interest, special self-interest. If business is no longer, and I don't like the idea of a payroll tax, because it's unnecessarily, in this state, burdensome. We've got a permanent fund dividend that generates, I mean, this year we spent almost $500 million. It is almost the amount of money necessary to plug this hole. And the constituency that receives that, with the exception of the people who are now getting access to a healthcare delivery system for nothing, and there aren't that many folks, I mean, the people who have access to IHS or the people that have access to Medicaid or the people that have access to Medicare, and all of those systems and their limitations, those are the only people, if you took their permanent fund dividend away and, you know, and gave access to a broader group of people, would be the only people that would really lose something. But I have, anyway, so I think you've got a system, you've got a source of revenue that public in Alaska generally has an eerie feeling is going to go away anyway at some point in the future. And it either goes away because you have an income tax and you take some and you give some, or it goes away because the state legislature needs it to run government, or, you know, it goes away for a lot of reasons, and the public has a kind of an eerie sense that that's coming down the road anyway. If you educated them over time and you built the coalition, you've got business that now isn't going to spend $207 million a year on premiums. The state government needs the $50 million that it saves just to begin, you know, plugging the hole or dealing with its own fiscal gap. The local governments, likewise, they need those savings just to, because it's not going to be there, the money's not going to be there in the future. You can build a coalition of interest. You take families like Karen, who, a family of three, she's spending $5,000 a year on insurance now. And so you take $2,700 from her permanent fund dividend. Does she care? No, she's just saved $2,500 or whatever. And there are families like that that, if you built the right coalition of interest, would see the advantage of giving up $1,000 and access. My father, for instance, never had insurance in his life, pays out of pocket for everything, and he gets a $950 check this year, but he's spending $5,000 in medical care each and every year. So that's an easy trade-off for him. You've just got to eke out those groups, that group of people, and build that coalition of interest. And business by itself, I mean, is a huge block of folks that you can start with. That $207,000 translates into, and you sell this to the guy who's going to give up $1,000 or $915 as higher wages or new jobs. The fact that he can find or she can find a job, and they haven't been able to find one. Business is probably, you could argue, better able to take that $207 million and turn it into something than the guy who buys his ticket to Hawaii with a $950 check. And that money goes out of state. I don't know. I think it could be crafted. It takes a long time to do it. If you blind yourself to the fact that it's costing you $589 million because you've got to fill that hole, the single payer system doesn't have a lot of political problems. But I don't think. Does it, Jim? I mean, all by itself, the system doesn't.
Well, I think a single payer system has a lot of political problems, yes. I think it could be very difficult when you get through it. I guess that's why I pointed out early on that whether you have a single payer system or not, you still have got massive savings. I mean, you don't need the single payer system to generate the savings. What you need is the cost containment aspects. You can have the cost containment aspect and increased access, and hopefully ultimately universal access. Single payer system, quite honestly, my perception is that when we start talking about the single payer system and we tie that to a package, that's just another big anchor that's going to stop us from doing anything. And that's why I'm suggesting, and maybe I shouldn't be brought up, but why I just think we should start thinking about, do we make everything wait for the single payer system, or do we start phasing it in, getting those savings, kind of what we were talking about before, getting those savings through various recommendations, various steps that we were proposing, and increasing access for the target populations, working towards the ultimate goal of universal access to single payer system. I'm not convinced yet that by the time you do cost control and increased access for target populations, that the final figure is going to be $589 million that you need for universal access. I'm still not convinced that's going to be the bottom line figure. I think it should be lower than that.
We've got Trisha and Jerry, but before we go to them, I'm sensitive to the fact that you've got X number of meetings left. And let me frame what seemed to me to be two key questions that you have to reach agreement on. Certainly one I think you do, and then the second one I think you will also need to, and they're separable. And let's assume the first is to achieve the goal of universal access. You know, we talk about, I'm going to come up with the phase-in issue and all that other business, but in terms of, here's the plan that we eventually want to put in place to achieve universal access. I guess you guys have to make a decision in terms of what you put in your report. Is it single payer? I mean, there are a number of ways that you can do that. You know, payer play is another option, or an employer mandate. All of them have waiver implications. All of them, you know, tick someone off somewhere along the line. But you've just got to make, I think one of the things that you would be helpful for you to at least tack down is, given Alaska, given what you've talked about over the last several meetings, which of those three is sort of your target for some point in the future? And then the issue, having decided that, then the second issue is, how do you get there from here? And do you phase things in and so on and so forth, the discussion that you're having now. But I think you just need to separate them to some degree, because you're going to have answers in both of those areas to put in your report. So I'm sorry to jump in, but I just wanted to sort of separate the, I think these are exactly the things you need to be talking about. But there are two decision points, it seems to me, that you need to come up with.
Right. I mean, I've got a million things rolling here in my head. I guess one thing, and I'm glad you just said that, Larry, is that I guess I'm wondering, Jim, if you remember that we need to do that. I mean, we need to make a decision between about something that has to do with major health care reform. It's not just cost containment and universal access or target groups accessing. I mean, we have a bigger charge than that in terms of something that I think we have a responsibility for that needs to come out in our report. It may not be certainly something that is something you feel like next year you can pull off, and I know that you're committed to both cost containment, and I'm convinced now you're committed to increasing access over the last year. But I think we have a charge that we've got to make a statement on something beyond those two things. And I think that it's not necessarily going to be politically palatable. And I know that that's certainly something that you have to keep in mind, because that's part of your role and your responsibility. But I don't know that that's in your role on the task force, and our role is this committee. I don't know that we, I think we need to be careful how much we are, I don't think we can't eliminate the political realities of it, but I think we have to be careful we don't get too over-concerned with the palatability of it. Because I think this coalition building is something that will happen. I think there's a lot of people who are not like Karen, who are like me, who have double coverage now, but every year, and in the next 5 years and 10 years, it will continue to eat away at my wage. The cost of health care through my employer will not be as good, will cost them more money, and will cost me more money.
Yeah. And if I could just respond, I'm not disagreeing, Trish, at all, and we shouldn't make the statement that that's the charge of the task force to put together the ultimate plan, right, the comprehensive reform package, the ultimate plan. I just want to be sure that when we walk away from this task force, that's understood very clearly, or we make a decision. We have to make a decision, I guess. Do we say, okay, it's got to be the ultimate plan all at once, and that's all we'll support and all we'll push for, or will we work out, or will we agree to the phased approach to really start attacking the problem? Because I'm going to be very honest with you, you're not going, an ultimate approach with a $589 million price tag is no sense introducing it.
It doesn't have a price tag.
It's a rearrangement, it's a savings, it's a reallocation. We all know how it works. Larry's exactly right. We saved it, where to go? I mean, you've got to have the new revenue source attached to it if you're going to have a $589 million, if you're going to lose the single payer system. You really will have to have that, Mark. You know that also. You can show it as a savings, but that's not going to do the job. And I guess my only point here was not to back off from where we're going, but to try to get people thinking about what are we really going to try to come, are we going to roll all together in one package and say that's got to be it or nothing, or do we take some other major steps that will save a lot of dollars, and through those savings we can begin to put more people into the system and access more people.
we got Jerry up. Let me just make a point of clarification, because I think I may have muddied the waters with respect to the savings issue. There are two savings in some ways. The 589 or whatever is a savings to businesses and individuals who no longer are making premiums, contributions, and therefore don't have that expense. That then turns into the need for a new revenue source or a new way of collecting those monies so that, there is, it has not been an escape of $589 million from the system, which, you know, would essentially devastate it. The second set of savings is, for everyone, is money that you wouldn't have spent in out years because of the expenditure caps, and certainly that's the tough one to ever sort of try to come up with a rationale that you're going to spend money and you're going to finance it with money that you didn't spend. Just the logic doesn't really hang there. Let me just say, and I'm going to turn it to Jerry. We work with a lot of task forces, and let me tell you that this is exactly the discussion you should be having. And I think you need to keep it real clear in your mind. Again, I think there are issues in terms of what your objective is and what is the route that you go to achieve that objective, and then what's the strategy. And I think you're having just the type of discussion that you need to have. I still want to come back and make sure that your objective or your goal or what you want to get to when you achieve, whenever it is that you achieve universal access, and I'm not undercutting that issue, is single payer or something else. And Mark raises the issue of, you know, if it's single payer, then what are you going to say about the funding source? Do you say it's a payroll tax, or do you say it's a permanent fund dividend, or do you say that possible funding sources might include X and Y and Z or whatever? I got a question on permanent fund dividend a little bit later, but this is just what you should be. This is when we put this presentation together. This is just the thing that I hope you would generate, Jerry.
This is Jerry Neer. Too bad I'm last on this. A lot of the ideas that I thought I was going to express here have already been voiced by others. This idea really intrigues me because it covers some things that sort of been a puzzle before. One is we get the universal access. It's there for everybody. Secondly, by looking at some other ways of funding this besides just putting on the back of the employer, that you broaden your funding base so that a lot of different sources are there available for this. And one item that you might add to your list of possible funding sources might be severance taxes, because a lot of Alaska's resources get shipped out of here with very little terminal revenue that accrues to the state. And using some kind of capitation or some type of limitation, if we do go universal access, it's sort of like a credit card to go shopping with, without limit. And if a person is not individually responsible for the cost that they run up, that thing can kind of run out of control. So that would come in line with some of the ideas that Jim's expressed, and also getting an element of responsibility on the part of all the consumers so they don't run away with it.
At some point, it's an issue that I mentioned to Karen. I need to, or it might be appropriate for me to put out on the table some of my thoughts in terms of those issues. Now that you've got the funding source, now that someone has a corridor or whatever, what might the delivery system look like to deal with those types of issues? Because I think you raise an important concern. And I don't want to stop this conversation. I'll come back and talk about that if it's appropriate.
Okay, and I think everybody's aware that through the years when the revenues were relatively easily attainable, that the state plugged in a lot of programs. And now those costs of those programs have increased and our revenues have sort of remained static or even have gone down, and we're going to be faced looking at some other sources. And I know it's a bad word, but I think that you guys are going to be faced with looking at the possibility of installing an income tax again. Maybe not in a year or two, but I understand this next year you're looking at $500 million deficit that's going to be handled in two sources. Either got to cut costs or come up with revenues, unless there's some other kind of magic.
That's just scare tactics, Jerry.
Roxanne and Jay.
Oh. One of the thoughts I was thinking of, I'd like to see this kind of plan put in. That's my personal thought. And even though it is a long term, I don't think that there's so much cost involved. And I'm just seeing us kind of get stuck on it. I mean, I agree that we're taking it from an area, but we're also getting something. I mean, people will be getting more money. And I've looked at, there's some major corporations right now that are looking at withdrawing from the system of just providing health care for their employees. You know, someone as big as Eastman Kodak right now is looking at withdrawing for them. What they're going to do is they would give the employees what they're spending on health care right now in their check, and they could participate in the health care fund or not participate in it. And it's been interesting to watch some of the fears that go out with the employees, how hard this is kind of to sell, even though they can purchase it again. There's that fear factor of they're not protected and what is going to happen in the future. So it's a, you know, it's a whole new area of education. But as far as being popular, I think that if we educate everyone to it, as Trish said, there's many people that are double insured, so if that's on their paycheck, they're in essence getting a raise. They're making more money. That'll be very popular. And if someone's paying individually right now and their premium goes down, that's more money to them, and it's very popular. So what we're kind of looking at is that it would be more attractive to the people that are insured right now. And if I'm looking at this right, and we have been working with the numbers for so long, that the majority of people are insured right now. It isn't vice versa. And so the popularity of a program like this, to me, looking at these numbers, would be that it would be very popular, because in an all-over situation, it's going to be cost-saving to the people that are insured right now, where we're looking at more money, or in any area, really is the people that are uninsured. They'll be taking it out of their pocket. And those are the people that I think would be, you know, that it would be unpopular to. So I just think it would be easier to sell than what we're looking at. We're looking at all the negative things of how we can sell this, but if we kind of look at the positive, I think we can do a heck of a job.
Jay? My sister Donna.
I was going to say a couple things. First of all, you folks probably, some of you probably know, the administration in the past hasn't been all that enamored with single payer plans. They've been looking at it primarily conceptually. You know, once we go back and talk about the numbers and sort of how it affects state government expenditures and other things, whether that changes, I don't know. But I should lay that on the table to start with, I guess. The administration hasn't been, so far, is not a great supporter of single payer plans. It seems to me that I don't know how we go about figuring out. I guess I agree with Jim that you need to phase this in somehow. You have to have an ultimate goal of where you want. You have to have a vision of where you want to go, and then you have to figure out how to phase it in. You know what I said earlier about the savings accruing by 1996. If you have cost containment, I wasn't necessarily implying that you only do cost containment the first 3 or 4 years, because I don't think that's fair to the providers. Part of the deal here was that trade-off for having a cost cut meant that you get that more people get served if you get some of your charity care and bad debt taken away. I think we need to have that in mind. I'm not sure, and I'm also not sure, you know, Karen's a process person. I don't know if having all of us sitting around trying to figure out how to put together a package to make the access and cost containment pieces fit together the long-term goal of universal access, the way to do it, or if somebody could break apart into a smaller group and have them come back with a strategy or something, I'm not sure.
Sister Donna?
Larry, you did tie together universal access and single payer system. I wonder if you would speak a little bit more about that, because I think that's a common feeling among many.
Sure. I am now going to move into the area from the technical to quasi-technical and sort of political and punches and all this this other business. I mean, I've tried to be fairly straight. I think single payer is a tough sell. Let's back up. Let's take them in pieces. The expenditure caps provides a lot of benefits to a lot of parties, except the provider community. And a lot of businesses would say, thank you very much for that. Then the issue is, now we want to move to a single payer system. I'm not so sure that that would make that more attractive. It would make sort of the current system a little bit more predictable, a little bit more manageable, you know, something a little bit more tolerable. So I'm not sure if, in fact, doing that would increase or decrease the support for going to a single payer approach. I think there's that issue, to be honest with you. Is single payer, I mean, I'm just sort of feeding back your comments, the single payer approach, I think, again, if your charge is universal access, and we can talk about phasing and time frames and all that other stuff, there are at least three different approaches. If, in fact, you want to get everybody covered, you can keep the current system, you can do the cost containment and the expenditure caps, you can do a payer play type approach. You could theoretically say, hope for people to come on board now that the volatility of the health insurance market has been reduced. I'm not sure that's going to get you over whatever period of time, Sister Donna, to universal access. So you've got to do some type of requirement. You could do payer play, which in a scenario where there is not cost containment says that the best deal in town increasingly becomes going into the public pool, and that gets you to a single payer system. Under cost caps and under cost containment, you know, the pressure would be lessened. In terms of a mandate, that's fairly straightforward in terms of what it would do. In both of those scenarios, though, you have an issue, and I'll just raise it because I don't have a good answer to it. You have an issue of, if in fact your objective is universal access, what do you do with people who are not in the system, you know, are not full-time employees or whatever, don't have access to employment-based coverage? How do you make them get coverage? And it is a make-type thing. Governor of Kentucky had a proposal, Kentucky Care, whatever the heck it was, that was a mandate and a requirement that individuals provide coverage. No specifics in terms of how you enforce that requirement, and some of the legislators said, you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to throw them into jail like we do for people who drive without automobile liability coverage? I mean, I think that's a very tough, politically difficult issue to deal with in terms of sort of the individual responsibility and coverage type issue, which you have less of a problem with in a single-payer system. You talked about single-payer with respect to sort of volatility and seasonality of the job market and all that stuff. I think there are some good arguments there, but they definitely... The big bang, the big expenditure savings, the big sort of dampening of the cost pressures is the expenditure cap. It's not the single payer approach. Single payer essentially is better than a wash in terms of bringing in the 75,000 or so without coverage. They're certainly separable. But I think that, you know, they need to be, you're talking about looking at them as a strategy, and it's a question of how you get from here to there with this. Second one. I'm not sure if that helps, Sister Donna, but if that's what you were looking for.
Well, again, what I hear you saying is that the way you get to universal access is through a single payer system, because the other systems do not allow universal access.
Unless you come up with a policy, if you really want to get everyone covered, which is sort of then focused on the individual. And I don't have any good answers for you in terms of how that really works or what the constitutionality issues are. But to get to universal access through some type of employer requirement, you have to deal with that issue. I'm lost. How about we go to Karen? Jim, did you have one?
I don't want to give away Karen here, but I just want to say, you know, I guess where I am still, I think you're still a whole area, is that after you've done cost containment, global budgeting, you've done small market reform, you've done several other steps that we've recommended. You know, you take care of a lot of those 75,000 folks. More than 50% of them are full-time, full-year employees. More than 50% of them are 200% above poverty level. They just don't have access for a number of reasons. One, because they aren't being offered the policies by the insurance industry. That's where your small market reform comes in. Secondly, because they get into it and they use the policy and they drop, or their inflation, their premiums are going up 22% a year or whatever it is. And that seems to me that when you do that, that 75,000 figure dwindles appreciably. So I guess you don't get universal access without a single payer system, but you sure get a whole lot more access than what we have now with the steps that we're recommending if we do them
if we get that much through, we probably have that bigger in half, if not more, in my mind.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the reason that some of this has come clear to me is that in our community meeting, it was a good experience for me because we did have, you know, a lot of people who came didn't have any vested interest in the system. Not a lot, we had some. And, you know, they don't really care if the insurance industry lives or dies or who's managing the money or, you know, ultimately that what they're looking at is from their own point of view, which is from their individual point of view. And I also sense that people were pretty much ready to look at some big ideas. They are ready to look at big ideas. Big ideas are being laid on the table nationally. They're being elevated to a level of credibility now. And I think that people are expecting us to present them with a big idea. I think how we present it is important, and I think that we don't have to solve this problem. I think what our job is to present information to people and then let the public debate begin. And the value of this approach is this is a plan to solve the problem. And I think we ought to be honest about what the attractions of it are and the attractions of it, and let people discuss that. And then I do believe that it would be good to put in, from my own personal point of view, just a short-term report, our more short-term recommendations, and also outline, as Jim has said, what kind of impact we can have on that 75 or 9,000 number, or on the average individual person's cost. And to really make it more clear that these are steps that can be taken that are more short-term. But if you want the big banana, if you're willing, if your goal is universal access and containment of cost, here's the plan. And, you know, it doesn't help the legislator necessarily, but it does help the public understand what the sacrifices are that need to be made and what the advantages are. And it lays it out for one time in the big picture.
Rod?
As we all know, there may be more and more employees who lose their plans or have them drastically reduced, particularly in light of this current Supreme Court decision, somebody against the H&H Music Company, on challenging whether the company, the H&H Music Company, wherever they are, can reduce their $1 million limit to $5,000 because they had an aid station, and it's a self-funded thing, and two courts and have said, yes, they can. The Supreme Court has that issue before them now. So I think the public realizes that we're approaching a meltdown in this whole healthcare financing issue and is interested in the big banana, as Karen phrases it. With respect to the single payer, I think we ought to adopt both of these cost containment one time, because part of the attraction of to the provider of the single payer is getting rid of all this paperwork and quicker turnaround. And I think that's a part of it. Send your bill to one place, and then they negotiate with the funding sources. The medical profession has already offered to do the cost containment thing in their CHIPRA plan, but another part of the CHIPRA plan was a single payer system too.
What else do we have? Mark, and then I'm going to try to get a little closure on a couple of these issues.
I guess I don't have a clear understanding of who the opponents of a single-payer system are. Who are those? What are the interest groups that oppose a single-payer system? Forget the cost for a second, but who are the opponents of that system? The insurance industry, right? Okay, that's
one.
Well, why is the administration? The administration is going to pick up $60 million next year. We did it next year, not to the savings, but just, I mean, if you didn't have to pay the premiums to Aetna.
We have
payment
numbers.
Okay, I know. So that's a sell. That you get sold. Kind of get some guys in the room and you sell them that. But
administration might change.
I think you can. I mean, I think you can sell all of this. But anyway, so who are the real opponents other than the insurance industry? Just a direct question.
Jim made a comment. I actually think that's very accurate. I'll take off. I'll again, just to get the discussion rolling, I think the insurance companies are going to have a problem. If you deal with cost containment, I think some businesses will have a problem because, as Karen said, they're giving up control. And
which businesses? Be specific.
Well, lots of businesses. Businesses that don't provide coverage right now, don't want to, don't think they have to, don't whatever, they're going to be hit with an 8% tax.
No, I'm still stuck on the permanent fund. So
okay, all right, now I'm going to actually come back to...
Think, when I ask a question, think about, I'm thinking
okay.
about
think
the permanent fund.
Okay. I apologize for speaking a big word to set rates and do all sorts of other things. So I think there's going to be, I would anticipate, again, all of the things being equal, that approach compared to another approach, some providers may be having some type of problem. I think the biggest thing, and I'm not arguing against it, I'm just sort of laying that on the table, is I think that there are going to be folks that, as Jim said, think it's un-American, it's big government, it's not right, they're not going to necessarily get a lot of the efficiencies, and they're not going to spend a year like you guys did looking at your labor force. I think the most compelling thing to me that you guys have talked about that we put on the table for a single payer is the fact that you've got a labor market that goes all over the place during the course of the 12-month period. And you got, you know, big seasonality, big part-time, big thus and such, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, that isn't necessarily the case in a lot of other jurisdictions, but that's certainly one of the factors that I think sort of pushes it here. But I think that the notion of big government is probably one that you're going to get most as sort of a diffuse sense of opposition. I think insurers, I think, you know, again, some maybe not depending upon how you finance it, you're right, maybe the business is not provided to you.
I find it difficult if you were thinking of this funding source to fill a gap over here as a permanent fund. It's not big government. You let them be, they've got the money, and they aren't big government. Nobody's afraid of the permanent fund corporation.
Can I ask a quick question on the permanent fund?
I mean, I think you could structure, and Jim, I mean, I used to dream about the permanent fund and I almost got defeated in an election, but you've got about 300,000 payers now, or people who are in the system. You've got your employees who are covered and your individual payers who are paying. That is a huge block of interest out there in a single payer system. If those people aren't paying premiums.
The one thing we're forgetting here is that the groups that Larry went through and talked about are the groups that are organized and are going to be the vocal groups. And we've gone through that. I mean, the State Chamber of Commerce will gear those folks up. And
if those
the
people can save
the medical
$207 million
people who should really be benefiting uninsured Alaskans never testify or write to their legislators, and you won't win that game.
I don't know that... The Chamber of Commerce ought to have an interest in saving its constituents $207 million.
Maybe our other stuff will look so much better, though, in comparison.
Well, we can do whatever we want to do. I'm just trying to make
sure. Something's more reasonable.
And then you put the permanent fund dividend into it, and then you got everybody stirred up.
You'd have a debate.
Mark, just a quick question for you.
Rolling it.
On the permanent fund dividend, is that a stable amount, or does that fluctuate?
Goes up.
I mean, it's never gone. It doesn't go down because of oil prices.
It's only gone down once,
and that's
because we gave out $1,000 the first time. But every year since then, it's gone up.
No,
exception
of
this
year.
It was
$953 a couple of years ago.
Exception.
$915. I'm going to try to throw a wet blanket. I just really believe, quite honestly, that we all want to work real hard to get a very comprehensive proposal. But I, for one, don't want to do all this, put a report out and walk away and see it just shot down and it never goes anywhere and we don't accomplish anything. That's not what we spent 2 years, 3 years, 4 years on this issue for. And that's why I just want to be realistic. I think the ultimate goal should be very clear. But you don't get the ultimate goal in one step.
Can we go to Rod and then Jay, and then can I try to see where we are? So a little.
Just for the purpose of the report, I again think we ought to recommend what we think is full cost control and full access, and then have a paragraph and say, and if it is work best to phase this in, fine. But we won't suggest a phase in the schedule, but we can make a nod toward phase in.
I think that's fine, except that lets everybody do what they want to do. We need a united task force, not one.
Ken,
disagree.
I'll get back to what Karen said about laying out a single payer universal coverage proposal. I guess my question is, after the task force goes away, who would champion that? Because really what you're talking about is an education process and people becoming comfortable with the idea over time, just like like folks here at the table have, or some of us. Are there groups out there? I don't see any reason. I don't see a benefit in doing that unless there's groups out there that will champion that, pick it up, and take it.
My answer to that is that we got dinged quite a bit from our critics this last year about not having a comprehensive approach. And this is a comprehensive approach. Again, I'm not clear that we should say, you know, this is the only way to do it. But what we should, I think if I were writing this, what I would say is we've looked at a lot of different things. We've spent a year and a half looking at this. And what our goal is total cost control and total access. For Alaska, this fits, and this is the best sizing that we have. And then I think we ought to disclose all of the bad things that might happen and all the good things. And then I think we ought to have a whole other equally big section of the report which talks about, in real terms that people can really understand, what the impact of short-term strategies might be. You know, and I guess the danger we run is that somebody could say, well, they only look at this and then get us on this. But this is valuable information. I don't have the answer to who would champion it. I think it's a major problem. The only people being paid to do this kind of work are the ones who stepping on it.
Can I you guys are going to have to make some decisions, because as Karen says, Karen referred to how you write this report, and since I'm going to take pen in hand and try to write this section for you, I need some direction from you. It seems to me that we have three questions that I'd like to, and Jim, at some point we need to go from straw to real votes, but decide how we want to handle that. The three questions are, in terms of to achieve universal access, what's going to be the model that this group wants to recommend? And it seems like there are three options. One is a payer play, one is an employer mandate, and one is a single payer type approach. And I think we need to get some sense of the group of which of those three are the ones that you want to see written, or as the one you want to see written up as the direction to go, the ultimate goal. We'll talk about getting there in a minute, okay? Second question, just to lay them out for you, is, depending upon what the answer to the first one is some guidance in terms of what you want to say about, to the extent that there's a need for a funding source, what the funding source should be, how specific you want to be. And then the third issue that I'm going to raise with you, and I'll try to break it, I think I can break it into at least sort of manageable, maybe not dichotomies, but manageable alternatives, and then we can sort of get down and give me some further guidance, is, you know, what do you want to say in your report as a strategy for getting there? Sort of all or nothing, or phase in, or whatever. I'll figure out what those options are in a second. But can we, are you folks comfortable with trying to see where we are on those three areas? I mean, I don't want to cut off the discussion, but it seems to me you've got a lot of, most of the issues that I thought needed to get put on the table have in fact been put up on the table. Is there anything else before we just get some sense of where we are in this?
Let's vote.
Okay. Can we try to deal with, and Jim, you're the chair, I need to be hopping in here if you don't want me to, but I'm just realize we're going to get some closure on this at some point. Should this be a straw vote which we then see if we're comfortable turning into a real vote?
Well, actually, Larry, and I guess I'm wondering if Erwin understood that we were really going to make these kind of decisions this morning. Representative Ellis is not here. I guess we can.
Oh, it's a straw vote, you know. They knew the subject of the matter. We all can always be here, but it's real important to vote. They should be here.
Sure, I don't care.
Well, we certainly understand that this is the next to last set of meetings.
Yeah, I mean,
we better make some decisions pretty soon.
I don't have a problem. I guess we should have announced that earlier on at the beginning of the week.
We'll see where we are and we'll get some time.
Why don't we? No, that's fine. Let's just go ahead and
see where we are. Okay. Here, question one, and that is, what is the configuration of the system, the ultimate system that will give you universal access? Is it a pay-or-play approach, which we've talked about? And again, these first two have sort of been taken off the board. We'll put them back on, the pay-or-play approach. B is an employer mandate. and A and B come with it some type of policy, and I don't have an answer for you, that requires individuals who don't get coverage through there to somehow get coverage. You know, there's a responsibility requirement in there. And C, a single payer approach. I think, are those the three? Are there any other options that need to get put on the table, or are those the three that we need to select from?
Well,
Karen?
Is the first question, is that what we want to do? Is that the first question that we want?
The first question, and we can rephrase it if folks are uncomfortable with it, where do you want to be? When you're at the point where you say, we have achieved our objective of universal access, is it going to be a pay-or-play approach? Is it going to be an employer mandate approach with individual requirements to get everyone coverage? Or is it going to be a single payer approach, such as we've talked about now? So those three. Then we'll talk about getting there from here. Okay? So A is pay-or-play, B is mandate and employer mandate, and C is single payer. We'll just have a show of hands. A for the pay-or-play, B for the employer mandate, C for the single payer.
Jeez.
That's your right. Get it to me. Okay, if I may then, let me suggest that a second question, and I'm really looking for direction from you in terms of penning this, is what you want to say about, or the degree of specificity. I'm not sure if this is a votable thing, but we'll give it a shot. If not, I'll just sort of get a sense of hands and I'll write it up and you can tell me I blew it down the road. Do you want to specify permanent fund dividend as a funding source? Let me throw these out and see if you're comfortable with the way I've laid them out. A payroll tax as the funding source, or say, we need to find a funding source, and possibilities include permanent fund dividend or payroll tax, and here are some of the numbers. Fourth option?
Not a fourth option. I think you have the list we have of the possible revenue sources is a good one because it shows the deficiencies of some and the kind of magnitude as you've characterized it. But what we don't have on here is the permanent fund earnings account. I mean, we have to call it that. I mean, you don't want to call it the permanent fund because people have it. Clear image of what that is, but the earnings, they understand that it's what goes in part, which goes into their pockets. So I think you have to list that. That's got to be
on this in terms of the options. If we go with three, fine, and I'll get whatever the appropriate language is on that. So, are you comfortable with those three, Jerry?
Jerry, my impression was that it might be sort of a collective type of an arrangement, not necessarily zero in on payroll taxes. The whole amount, and looking at some of the other.
I would say, I mean, we could put that discussion.
Share that load amongst a broad spectrum of funding sources.
We could certainly put that discussion in as part of the C. It could be this, it could be that, it could be a combination of the above.
Rod? And with respect to that latter, payroll tax is attractive, but so are these minor alcohol and so forth. And then there's another group of people who don't work. Don't have a payroll to deduct it from, who still have one way or another, and God knows from what source, considerable income, and there ought to be a way, I hope, outside of an income tax, to not give them a free ride on the people who do work and have a payroll. I don't quite know where it is, but I think a combination package is an attractive alternative.
Okay, this is an easy one then. A is, say, we want to do it through payroll tax. B is, we want to do it through permanent, whatever the proper name is. C, there are a number of different options. Here's the information, and, you know, it could be one or more of the above, some type of combination. So A for payroll tax.
Additional discussion before we get to that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not good.
Yeah.
I'm new at this.
I think we mechanically will create all kinds of very complex things if we're not careful. That we're uniquely different in that we give $1,000, $915 this year to everybody. So we have a distribution system where we've got everybody. You don't have to worry about them showing up. They fill out an application because they want the $915. So what I just would make a pitch for us not to think about creating a new system, either a payroll system or an income tax system. All these bureaucratic systems that you set up, that those are the things that make people anxious about government, setting up these systems to take something from them. We've got a system, and it's a giveaway system right now, through the permanent fund dividend. So I'm just going to continue to make my pitch about the dividend system as a funding source and a mechanical system. I think it can be sold over a period. Not overnight, but it takes maybe a couple of years of grassroots work on that. But I'm just encouraging people not to necessarily support creating a new system of tax collection, whatever system that is.
Jim, and
then how do you vote for both of these or all of them? I'd like to vote for all three.
C is all of the above. Here are the possibilities. Could be a combination of them, whatever. Not necessarily pick a specific one. Jim?
I guess I just don't understand for sure what Mark is saying. I guess I don't understand what you're saying. Are you saying, I think they become real suspicious of government when you're saying they get concerned with government, you're setting up other taxation systems. They're going to be just as suspicious if we're saying we're going to take away from you something you're getting, the government's giving you right now, the dividend. I think you are opening up a real can of worms here. You can put that in as a possible funding source, permanent fund earnings. I wouldn't say dividend. If you say dividend, forget it. Permanent fund earnings, I think, probably should also, and maybe that comes elsewhere, Larry, put in here the sure it's clear that there's another source, and that's the savings that come from all this. That's a possible revenue source. The savings that are generated from all this also.
But this, just to clarify that point, the savings you would get, hard dollars, by having people spend what they would have spent, have a portion of that go to cover the real cost of coverage, and then take the remainder and put it away.
Just to be clear, that really it's just it's almost a reallocation of resources, which you need more than just adding more money in all the week. You're going to have to add the new money, but the savings is going to be greater than the money you're adding to the system, right?
Right. Right.
Think that should be part of the.
I got you. Yeah. This really is a distributional issue. That's really what we're focusing on here. And it's new money to the extent that we take away certain sources and we have to find a vehicle for bringing it back or keeping it in the pot. Roger, get your comment in? Roxana, and then let's see if we can...
I just wanted to, since we're voting on where the funding is coming from, I just wanted to touch a little bit with you, see if you agree with what my thought is. That there is savings, but it's here in the POC and it's not here in the healthcare system where it was. Right? If it's not in the healthcare system, you've given it in the payroll, or it is somewhere. That money is somewhere.
You didn't spend it.
Right. We haven't spent it, but it's there somewhere. As an example, what I wanted to do was kind of use like that company I was talking about that went to their employees and said, okay, here's how much we're spending on healthcare now. We're not going to do it in the future, but here's the money. These people now have the money in their hand. It's still not in the healthcare system, but it's in the hand to be spent for it. What I was looking at here is in the option of income tax, that sometimes we look at these things and it's like extra money we're going to spend. And we were talking about, how do you make individuals buy insurance? Do you arrest them or what do you do? But in the income tax area, if the state of Alaska had an income tax, let's say it's, $5,000 a year or whatever per individual, unless you have proof of insurance, unless, or that this insurance was deductible from that. That's the way that we can work the income tax, and even when you're looking in the area of 5% or 10% or, take 5%, 5% income tax would get us halfway there already. And if these people already have the money and already have the health care and they don't have to pay that money, well then it's less of what we have to come up with. Am I making myself clear?
I think you are. I think you're actually really putting your finger on the fact that we need to be clear about the savings business, because we've got a couple of types of savings here. And let me just sort of walk through business. Okay, and let's say let's focus on this. This is 5 years from now. They would have to pay, to continue their health care coverage, they'd have to pay $2,500 per person. I'm making up the numbers, okay? But this is the number, okay?
And who is this, the businessman?
This
business?
Is, yeah, let's just...
Employer.
Yeah, let's just say, fine, we'll simplify. It's just the employer, okay? So they would have to pay $2,500. Now, let's not get
this to what?
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's if you did nothing, if you sort of the current system, the A option, year whatever, year 1995, they would have to pay $2,500. But you put in place cost containment elements, okay, that essentially bring that number down to $2,000. Okay? The $500 savings, and again, I'm making this up, is through the global budgeting, the expenditure cap, so on and so forth. Now we're talking about single payer. And what we're talking about is they would, here's what they would have paid otherwise. There's $500 in foregone expenditures. How's that? We'll use that term, foregone expenditures, that they don't have to, that they didn't have to take out of their pocket. And maybe they would have made it, maybe they would have dropped coverage, maybe they would have done who knows what. But we know that now they can get the coverage for $2,000 because of that public policy, the expenditure cap policy. And now what we're doing is saying, but rather than have you do it in the form of premiums under single payer, do it in the form of a payroll tax. Okay, so that just moves over here. Roxana, the thing I want to make clear about is that, so suddenly we have this disappear, this $2,000 that they would have paid in terms of expenditures, we simply move it over to a payroll tax. And the way that, and I think the way that we talked about it working is that if suddenly they didn't have to make this $2,000, you know, there's not that fringe benefit, let's say it is 8% or whatever, to suddenly tax the salary another 8%, in other words, take it out of the worker, doesn't make sense. I mean, they just, the employer no longer has to pay the $2,000 fringe benefit, which he or she did, okay, and the employee suddenly doesn't get a fringe benefit, or gets the same fringe benefit but has to pay 8% of their of his or her take-home tax on that. What we're saying, I think, in terms of just the distributional issue, is saying, theoretically, you increase the salary by 8%, and then we tax it 8%, so the employee is held harmless. The employer spends the same amount he or she would have spent on premiums under this control system, and it's sort of a wash. The issue here, though, where you, I wasn't sure if you were saying this $500, that would have been spent, otherwise been spent on benefits, that you're not saying that has to go to the employee as well.
No.
That's just out of the system. That gets spent on some other good stuff, infrastructure or whatever the heck it is. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Everyone comfortable with that sort of division in terms of, because we've used savings in two, in several different ways.
And as long as you understand, you know that that column that shows payroll tax could be a number of sources of revenue,
yes.
Not just payroll tax.
Yes. Well, if that's, if we vote C, I guess is what I'm saying. Okay. Can we, I don't want to, I'm not trying to push
Thank
you guys,
you,
I just, but at some point we need, if you're at the point or you come close to the point of having some closure, some notion of how you feel about this, I just want to see if we can get some feel for the group. So Ken, is there more discussion?
So is the income tax, are we going to vote on that at all? As one of the combination things, because there certainly are people in Alaska who live off of dividends and interest and things like that, but don't have a payroll that ought to pay, shouldn't get a free ride from the people who do have.
That's where the dividend comes in. That's where the dividend comes in.
It seems to me we can do several things. Just on, and again, this
not
is
entirely.
This is just me trying to focus the issue. We could have four options. We could say payroll tax, an income tax, use of the permanent fund dividend, or some combination, just say here are the options, needs to be worked out.
Yeah. I guess I'm getting confused now as to where we're going. I thought option C was basically what Representative Boyer had suggested. You had passed out possible revenue sources, which listed payroll tax, income tax, sales tax, excise taxes. List those as possible revenue sources. It becomes very obvious that some of those don't amount to a hill of beans, so they're not really very viable. And add to that, whatever the other suggestions were. One, the not, I would urge us not to say permanent fund earnings. I think if we use that term, we might as well. But anyway, permanent fund earnings.
I think,
I mean, there's folks who are getting, who have insurance now, are getting their dividends marked, who are not going to understand the relationship.
At the public hearings that I've been to, and I've been to three of them now, there's people at each of the public hearings who brought up the permanent fund dividend and said they'd be willing to contribute to all a part of that toward a health care fund.
It's a very small minority, and let me tell you, well,
I think it's changing. Right. I think it's growing. I think that minority is growing.
Okay.
Because people are seeing, they are, because health care has become such a national issue, people are realizing what's going to happen in the next decade, and they're seeing that even though they're covered, people like me, that is going to continue. If something's not done, that is going to continue to eat away at money in your hand, you know, wages, etc.
Let me say, maybe you're all right, and maybe that's exactly right. Had people say to me that they would give up their dividend to do a number of things. I've had people come and testify and say, time to start paying income tax. You propose any of that stuff, and you get, it does not fly. I mean, people individually will tell you that, and they'll come and win the spirit of things when they're talking about health care and testify at your teleconference. But when they, next year, don't get their $915 in the mail because it's gone somewhere else and they're already getting insurance, they're not going to understand that.
Jim, let me make sure that I have a sense of what your druthers would be. Would it be to be non-specific and list a bunch of possible funding sources?
I think you say permanent fund earnings, you have created a firestorm that's going to cause you tremendous problems anyway. If you say permanent fund dividend, you've created an insurmountable obstacle. Just talking about the earnings, we even spend $3 million of the earnings, or whatever it is, not I don't know, you know, on the hold harmless provision, Mark, and we get run out of the state. It's just not an easy sell.
I understand all of that, but you're not going to get any of this stuff done because all of it's a hard sell. Another $1 million for anything you want to do, $1 million for anything you want to do, in the years ahead, it's going to be impossible feat, I think. So all of it, it ought to all be on the table because it's all difficult. It's all expensive, and the magnitudes are large, and so you've got, you know, to avoid it by not mentioning the permanent fund earnings. It's just that, it's avoiding it.
I didn't say not mention permanent fund earnings. I said don't say dividends.
Earnings.
Okay. Jim, let me ask you this. We have, here are the options we can put out on the table, and we can try to narrow them. One is say, preferred method of financing payroll tax, preferred method of financing permanent fund earnings, preferred method of financing, if you want, broad income tax. And a fourth option would be to say, there are a number of possible funding sources, and here are our analysis of several of them, and not be specific, and there might be some combination of the above. It seems to me that those are the four options that I've heard discussed. One sort of vote that may need to take place, Jim, your call, is on that fourth option, where numbers of different options, and here are some of them, and we've looked at them, maybe one or more of the above, is whether or not to include a reference to the permanent fund earnings in that sort of listing of possible revenue sources. And I'll leave it to you to decide whether we want to see, whether we want that vote before we go for A through D.
Actually, I don't think you leave it to me. I think you leave it to the committee. But I guess what I'm hearing you say, maybe we're getting way up. I guess my thought about the revenue sources would be to list, instead of saying preferred payroll taxes or preferred income, list all possible revenue sources.
If that's where I thought we'd get to, I was just trying to give you the opportunity. There
right.
seem to
list
be some strong
revenue sources, and if you want to include permanent fund earnings, include permanent fund earnings.
Then do we not need a vote on this? It's D. Say here are the possible funding sources, maybe one or more of these. Leave it at that? Or no?
Yes.
That's pretty
unanimous.
That's all right, because that presents the public reality. You know, these are all the sources of money that we can think of, and ultimately they've got to agree with reality.
I mean, the only thing we give up from that approach is making it simplistic, like the Schiffer plans, you know, said, and something sticks in the public's mind, this is the way we're going to solve it. But I think what we gain from it is that we lay out
Are we including in our options permanent funds?
Earnings.
Earnings.
Yes. That was my takeaway from that.
The earnings. I mean, the earnings are much greater than dividends. I think
you're
just the fund earnings, which means
on
you
the list,
might
yes.
continue the dividend program and use earnings for health care.
Maybe I'll get some help from someone in terms of what those numbers...
Right. I was going to recommend you use the same baseline, which is the 1991 permanent fund earnings. If you're using 91 figures for everything else, using them, and it was a bigger earnings year, it was $1.2 billion that year would be your figure, roughly, somewhere in that neighborhood.
So, Sister Donna, are you comfortable with that?
I don't agree with that.
So that's added to the list, and the text around it would be number of different possibilities for funding. Here are some of the numbers associated with them. Could be one or a combination of more than one of these. How are we doing? The third issue, we need to roll. The third issue is, again, it's as much how we write this thing, or I write it, and I'd like to get it as close to your brothers as possible. The first go around, you have, and you've already talked about one of the things on my list to raise with you. You have interim recommendations calling for small market reform, calling for prioritization of subsidies, low-income women and children, so on and so forth. No programs, but just those are your preferences. You have a recommendation that you will hear from the community rating group that will talk about a phased-in community rating approach. You now have a decision about your ultimate goal for universal access is a single-payer approach. I'm not sure what the best way to frame this would be, but because I think you need to come back and talk about whether you want to be more specific about your subsidization priorities. But do you want to basically, I guess here are the options, put all of those in, one is an immediate doable now, let's move on it, another phase in terms of community rating, which is, it has a phase-in feature in the recommendation coming to you from that subcommittee, and then ultimately, and maybe not specify a time frame or whatever, single payer. Or do you, I guess the other option would be to jump right to single payer.
I don't have the report with me, our interim recommendations, but we have much more than what you just listed, of course.
Not on access. I don't believe so, yeah. Actually, you did. You did. I'm sorry. That was my short end. I actually have it here.
But there's two sides to it also. I mean, are you suggesting that, I guess I didn't know what you were suggesting, Mary. Are you suggesting that we just phase in the access side?
I thought that was the discussion. The discussion I did not hear, correct me if I'm wrong, and again, I'm trying to collapse things and move them a step further. I did not hear phase in other than a data collection period. I haven't heard anyone talking about phasing in of the expenditure limits. I thought we were really talking about getting from here to the universal access piece and whether you have interim steps that you're going to recommend or whether those steps no longer are part of your recommendation.
How do the cost team steps relate then? When do they go into effect?
When do they go into effect? I think the point that I was making, Jim, unless you folks say otherwise, we talked there about, and I think there's text there, a year to develop the data and then a phase-in, or I think you said a phase-in, of 3 years to get down to CPI. I haven't heard anything that would change that.
Okay. I just want to be sure that was clear.
Yeah.
Then?
Is that in fact what you folks have been talking? I just haven't heard that discussion. Jerry?
Yeah, Jerry, you're getting back to your community rating. Isn't that just moot if we go the single payer system?
Yeah.
Or it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But maybe we need to have a modified single payer system.
Hold that for a second. Let's deal with Jim's issue about if cost containment.
I was going to deal with his issue, but go ahead.
Okay. I got that. Here's what you guys have your interim recommendations on the access side. I should have summarized them here. State high risk pool, check that off, passed. Small market reform, single waiting period for pre-existing condition, state-sponsored insurance pool, prioritization of state subsidies, first priority to low-income pregnant women and children, other low-income adults, high-risk individuals, and small businesses. Those were your March recommendations. you have a recommendation coming before you that that has embedded in it a phased-in approach to community rating. And now you have this ultimate one of single payer. And the question is, how do you want this to fit together?
And I guess going back to Jerry's point, the community rating may not be necessary when we get to single payer approach, but it seems to me that it's something that should be done in the interim. I don't see the single payer being there in the near future, but the community rating, the phased-in approach to community rating that the subcommittee is talking about, may be something we want to do immediately. And then, when single payer finally happens, we don't need community rating at all.
Mm-hmm. That would be if that were your phased-in approach. That's exactly the way the pieces fit together. You would do the small market. You would tighten the bands to the point where you got to your community rating approaches that are in that recommendation. And then there would be, and I don't want to get into talking about this right now, there would be theoretically a community rating type approach if you went to a capitated system. That's where the community rating piece would carry over. But the issue now, if again, I'm just trying to clarify where you guys need to make decisions. I have not heard anything about pushing back or delaying implementation of the expenditure caps. In fact, they've been talked about, you know, those sort of bringing money into the system. Right. The issue is what you want to do on the access side, what your strategy is there. Rod?
Well, I thought I heard somebody say or read that there'd be a year of data collection before the cost containment went into effect.
Yeah, what we said in our report is that the task force recognizes global budgeting will take several years to implement, representing several phases. First year following the creation of the authority will be used to establish a data system and begin collecting data. Year two, data will be analyzed and global spending limit or sub-goals reimbursement system will be established. In year three, global budgeting will be in place. So it just doesn't happen overnight.
Well, I don't see why the creation of the single payer system couldn't go on at the same time that they both start at the same time. I guess 3 years down the line. Why would you want to delay the single payer system beyond that?
Karen?
It seems like we're trying to handle a lot in this question. And the question that I'm hearing you ask is, what do you want me to write for review by the committee, by the task force? And I guess my thought would be, because we can always eliminate things as we see them, we have gone on a tremendous direction of putting a lot of subcommittee work into a lot of different subjects, practice, public health delivery, community rating. I'm unwilling at this point at 12:10 to say that I want to eliminate certain recommendations from our body of work, which we transmit to the public. I am assuming, I guess I would like to make the motion that everything that's in the interim report, except as specifically amended by the committee through the subcommittee work or in other ways, be back in the body of work that we transmit to the public for the final recommendation, and that be your direction. If nothing gets dropped unless specifically voted out.
Karen, that's perfectly fine. I just need you to say that.
All right, that's my
question. Jerry.
Well, just give some thought to this single-payer system. Outwardly sounds simple, but if you sort of think about it a bit, there are some real problems. For example, is it going to be for residents only? What mechanism do you use to keep people from coming in to get their major surgery and moving back out again, since it seems to be a sort of internally funded type of device, and so it's going to need some modifications. But I would like to suggest maybe I'd be willing to work with somebody on this to see what sort of a tune-up it might need to work for us. I can just see some real problems with it.
Well, I made a motion,
and
there's a motion.
I'm new at this, I'm not sure how. Discussion, is that the next step after a motion? Jim?
Yeah, that's the next step. Make your motion again,
all right.
So I understand.
Let me try again. The question, the
question that the motion responds to is what should Larry write in the report for our review and our consideration? And my motion is that all the ideas that are in the interim report be advanced for him to write descriptions of for our final report, except as those specifically amended by subcommittee work that's been brought to the full committee.
Just a point of clarification, the issue in terms of what I write is not the key. I mean, the issue is how the pieces fit together. And what you're saying, if that's what the group wants, is real helpful because I can sort of craft them together.
Yeah.
But understand, they can't all happen at once. They're mutual,
right.
At least some of them are mutually exclusive. And I think that's sort of the
challenge. You know, perhaps you should be directed to do a time phase and thing. But the question, we can't sit here and have a general discussion about what should be in and out at this point, is what I'm trying to say. And what I was hearing you say is that you need some direction to go back and give us a document so we can see how it fits together. And there's no way for us to see how it fits together, I think, unless we see it right. I'm not getting a second, so unless I'm here.
Well, let me ask, and this I think is speaking on the motion, Larry, are you clear whether the single-payer system will come at the same time as cost containment or not?
No, I'm not. And let me be, you have three pieces in there. You have immediate steps, you have phased-in community rating, if in fact that's what you do, and that's yet to come up, and then you have a single-payer type approach. If you tack down single payer as happening the same time cost containment does, which is the issue that you're putting on the table, you do one of two things. You either push single payer out to give each of these sort of the small market reform a chance to do its thing, then you phase in community rating in 3 to 5 years, and then you move to single payer. Or you don't push out single payer, and 1 year you do small market reform, the next year you do community rating, the third year you do single payer. And I'll tell you quite honestly, that's going to make people crazy. I mean, it's just changing the rules of the game every 12 months. And that's better. That's why I said what I write isn't so much the issue. It's just sort of thinking through sort of how these pieces fit together. I'm not necessarily suggesting that they get thrown out, but if you move up single payer to start soon, you know, this other stuff is just sort of jerking the market around several different ways, so I'm not sure what grand purpose.
Well, I'm glad to tell you, I'm not that interested in the small market reform because I don't think it does very much at all, and I'm not interested based in community rating because I think that just postpones things unnecessarily, and I think that cost containment and single payer ought to start to whenever it's feasible to do it. I hope that isn't 5 years away.
I withdraw my motion, but I also don't think it's possible to get to where you want to go at this minute with the question that you put on the table.
This is real. I mean, forget about motions or whatever. These are really, I mean, this is what I've heard this morning. These are the two issues. These are the two options. You either sort of move into this thing and try to sell where you're going, your ultimate goal over a period of time, or your approach is to sell your ultimate solution in soon, now, same time that you do cost containment.
I think we need to create some more time on the agenda to continue.
Yeah,
think about it, then. It can get written either way.
No, well, I agree with that, but when we do it, we have to look at the agenda's actually pretty close. So I don't know when we get back. We really should get back to this, and I've been looking at the agenda trying to figure out where we could. And that's
You can have my time.
You don't have anything to report? Are you going to be here tomorrow? How long will you report?
I can make our report 15 minutes.
Why don't we do that then? Why don't we take Karen's report in the morning at 9 o'clock, do that as quickly as possible, and then use the rest of the time until 10:30. To get back to this discussion.
Okay. Are folks clear on what the...
state what the two options are?
There's probably a whole raft of different alternatives, but let me see them as I see them. That is, and I'm going to color them a little bit. That is, you say the approach that we want to go on the access side and the coverage side is single payer, and we want to do that as soon as possible. We want to get it going the same time we're doing cost containment, and we're going to go from here to single payer. That's, you know, the upside is you get where you want to go that much quicker. The downside is that you're saying that that's the package that you're going to try to sell, and it's the only access package, which is going to be a tougher sell than some of these other things. The other option, and I'm not saying it's Karen's option, but is to say we've got immediate recommend on the access side, we've